Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Julia Koivu. Welcome to the John Koivu Show. My dad has helped thousands of people around the world lead happier and more successful lives. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you already built your life, but now you need to shore up some weak spots, this show will help you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So today I want to share some thoughts with you on this theme of weapons of our warfare. Weapons of our warfare. And sometimes I think you and I don't understand the types of weapons that we have at hand if you call yourself a Christian. Now, there's been many, many ancient weapons that have been created for hundreds and thousands of years. Let me just share a couple of them with you. In 13th century China, they had landmines way back then. In fact, they were called the underground sky soaring thunder. So if you can imagine several hundred years ago, how scary that would have been to people that were contemplating attacking another group. Then in about 300 years earlier than that, they had what's called a fire lance, where these long bronze or iron tubes would fire shrapnel at people not too far away. So they've had weapons of a variety of kinds for many, many thousands of years. In fact, they have and have had psychological warfare, and we'll get to that certainly. But Sun Tzu said, all warfare is based on deception. He said, hence, when we are able to attack, we must seem unable, he said. When using our forces, we must appear inactive. When we are near, we must make the enemy believe that we are far away. When far away, we must make him believe that we are near. Again, warfare is not only used by guns and torches and landmines, but it's also used by mind games that are played still these days. So turn over to 2 Corinthians chapter 10 in the New Testament. The New Living Translation puts it in a pretty unique way. 2 Corinthians chapter 10. And starting in about verse 1, 2 Corinthians 10, starting in about verse 1, it says, now I, Paul, appeal to you with the gentleness and kindness of Christ. Now, I could just pause right there and invest about another half hour just in that little phrase, but I'll stay on point. He says, though I realize you think I am timid in person and bold only when I write from far away. It sounds like the internet these days, doesn't it? How, you know, you wouldn't say certain things face-to-face, but you get online, you say some pretty ugly stuff. But again, that's another half-hour sermon. We'll leave that alone. Verse 2. Well, I am begging you now, so that when I come, I won't have to be bold with those who think we act from human motives. Let's get to the point. Verse number 3. He said in this paraphrase, we are human, but we don't wage war as humans do. We use God's mighty weapons, not worldly weapons, to knock down the strongholds. The King James puts it, for pulling down strongholds. In fact, the Greek phrase is the destruction of strongholds. We'll get to that in just a few here. He says, of human reasoning, to destroy false arguments. We destroy every proud obstacle that keeps people from knowing God. We capture their rebellious thoughts and teach them to obey Christ. Verse 6 now. And after you have become fully obedient, we will punish everyone who remains disobedient. Let me go back up to the pulling down of strongholds. Keep that thought in your mind. We'll come back to that very, very soon. Strategic warfare doesn't happen by accident. Have you ever had a meeting that you had to have or be involved in, and you had to prepare for an extended period of time for that meeting. You never want to go into an event or a meeting or some sort of conference not knowing what you're going to say, because you're going to end up on the short end of the stick, right? That's kind of like what warfare is all about. In fact, in the King James Bible, it says that they use the word carnal. And that word is, or the translation of that word is, fleshly made or an uninspired nature. Now, don't raise your hands, but I think many of us have had days, or maybe hours, maybe not full days, but maybe hours, where we have had that uninspired nature, where we have allowed our frustration, our anger, our fear, our anxiety to take over. And some, in fact, some of us can live in that zone for days at a time if we're not careful to get our minds in the right direction, which we'll get to that maybe another day. A paraphrase of this text by a gentleman by name Rick Renner, he says, Our God-given weapons are to be used in connection with a divine strategy. Interesting term. He says, but don't look to the flesh to find the strategies, for the battle you need is not going to arise over your natural talent, mental exercises, and effort. Some of us think that we can handle stuff, that we can handle life on our own without even contemplating what's in the good book. Because there's answers in the good book that, even though they've been written 2,000, 4,000 years ago, many of the answers that we need these days are still available for us to read. In fact, there was a Jewish meeting back, oh my goodness, 15 plus years ago now. It said, the speakers here said, in the ancient world, we're going to talk about strongholds. He said, in the ancient world, a prosperous town would not only build a wall around itself, but also a stronghold. The stronghold was an immensely fortified tower built in the wall, which was so strong that even if the enemy breached the wall of this part of the world, this town, the stronghold could be defended with relatively few soldiers. If the stronghold was taken, that was at the end of the battle. That was the last thing they could even take. It closes here. It says, but from the moment a person is born, the enemy seeks to build strongholds. And then we talked about moments ago how that our job, at least one of our jobs, is to have the ability to tear down the strongholds in our lives. I'll get to that more. If you don't have to turn there, but over in Psalm 9:9, it says, the Lord is a refuge for the oppressed. Listen, a stronghold in the times of trouble. So you can see also in the scriptures that there's strongholds that the enemy tries to have in our lives. But there's also strongholds that God has available for us in our lives. So maybe, at least in the Old Testament times, a cliff, C-L-I-F-F, a cliff could be used as a stronghold because it's high and it's hard to access. Oftentimes, in fact, over in 1 Samuel chapter 23, a literal example, verse 14, so, 1 Samuel 23:14, it said, David stayed in the desert strongholds in the hills of Ziph, meaning that he knew that he was being, you know, attacked, chased, threatened. So he was able to find a place that he could look down upon what's going on around him, that he was able to maybe defend himself in a way that he couldn't if he was down in the valley. Sometimes I think mentally, we have to get to a point mentally, maybe even spiritually, that we have to rise above the stuff that's going in our lives in order to see what things really are. Juliana is on the 11th floor of Johns Hopkins Hospital, the children's wing, and you can see she's on the south end of the building. You can see the key bridge. I mean, she can see it. I mean, it's not that far away, but the view you can see from the 11th floor is way different than you can see on the first or second floor. We're talking about strongholds right now. In Psalm chapter 144, verse 2, Psalm 144, verse 2, it says, the Lord is, this paraphrase, my goodness and my fortress and my high tower, or the original text says stronghold, and my deliverer, my shield, in he whom I trust, who subdues my people under me. So again, the Bible uses this term stronghold on both sides of the scale, both with the enemy who builds strongholds against us or tries to build strongholds against us, and then God could be viewed as a stronghold in our lives also. The same Jewish meeting that happened some years back shared, when the War of Independence began, the Arab Legion controlled the Latrim stronghold. From this perch, they said, they could pick off the caravans carrying supplies up from the Jews to the Jews in Jerusalem. This was one stronghold that had to be taken. It had a stronghold on Jerusalem. It had a stranglehold on Jerusalem. Five separate times, it says, the fledgling Israeli defense forces tried to take it. Again and again, the Arab Legion, the best, the British-trained soldiers on the Arab side, drove the attackers away. So the Israelis built what they called a Burma Road. They circumvented the stronghold over rough terrain so the supply trains could get through. I'm making a point. Bear with me. David, in the Old Testament, took the stronghold of Jerusalem and made it his battlefield, his capital. You know where Jerusalem is. It's on a high place. Right. It's not down in the valley, because you read in Scripture over and over that people went up to Jerusalem. Right. Literally, they went up to Jerusalem in height, right? So in 2 Samuel chapter 5, the Jebusites taunted David. It said, "You will not get in here. Even the blind and the lame can ward you off." How many people, how many situations in your life have you been talked down to, or spoken like you don't have a clue what you're talking about, when people don't have a clue that you have a clue what you're talking about? Have you ever been, all of us have been insulted in that way. They think that you don't know when you really do know. They thought, you know, David can't get in here. David doesn't have a clue. He was a former shepherd, right? He doesn't know what he's talking about. But David was determined to stand his ground. Joab, if you remember, broke through a tunnel, didn't he? And he got the job done. So there's always a way. It's just to find a way. You got to be determined enough to find a way to get stuff done. There's always a way to get it done. Over in Jeremiah chapter 51, ancient Babylon was also built up as a seemingly invincible stronghold. Again, Jeremiah 51 verse 53 declared, "Even if Babylon reaches the sky and fortifies her lofty stronghold, I," this is God talking in the scripture, "I will send destroyers against her." So even if stuff seems impossible, yep. Listen, I'll say it again. Even if stuff seems impossible, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's impossible. Because I know you've seen it, and I know I've seen it, that as maybe the old King James puts it, that deliverance can come another way. The answer can come a way that you least expect. How many times has that not happened to you? That you thought that there's no way X, Y, Z can happen. And you look, you open up every door, you open up every cabinet, you turn over every rock, but you had no clue that the answer was coming in a direction that you least expected, even from the people that you least expected it to come from. Over in 2 Samuel chapter 22, verses 2 and 3. Again, 2 Samuel chapter 22, verses 2 and 3. David said, "The Lord is my rock, my fortress," listen, "and my deliverer." He's talking God, this is David talking, that God is his rock, his fortress, his deliverer. He says, "My God is my rock, in whom I take refuge." He says, "My shield and the horn of my salvation." This is David talking. He says, "He is my stronghold, my refuge, and my savior. From violent men you save me." So if the stronghold is a high place, a physical high place, then maybe, I don't know, maybe you and I have to get mentally to a higher place. Maybe we have to get spiritually to a higher place. Maybe we have to look at things from a higher place in order to see things that we might not see when we're in the valley. And I live in the valley a lot of days, and I think you live in the valley a lot of days. But in order to see things that you can't see, you have to take the steps to the high place, which takes a long time. Sometimes your legs get tired. Sometimes you get weary. Sometimes you get discouraged because you don't think that you'll ever reach the high place. Until you get to the high place. In fact, we were at the hospital yesterday, and we got on the wrong elevator, and it was the Passover elevator. On Saturdays, it stops at every single floor because the Jewish culture doesn't, it's work to push the buttons on the elevator. So every Jewish hospital, there's one elevator that stops on every single floor. So I thought we were never going to get where we need to get to. So at like, I don't know, five floors, guys, I don't know what it was, or six floors, but where we had to go, I was like, I'm done with this. I got off at the next floor and hit the Gentile elevator, which is a lot more Gentiles than Jewish elevators in there. So I had the Gentile elevator, and that took us to where we needed to go pretty quickly. The point being that sometimes you have to find a way to find a way. Hear me. Sometimes you got to find a way to find a way. Because I would be the first to tell you that stuff doesn't always come knocking at your door. Sometimes you got to go. You got to search. You got to be diligent. You got to put in the time. You got to put in the effort. You got to put in the blood and the sweat and the tears. That sometimes takes an extended period of time. But there are other times when it doesn't take that long because of your, this is I know the wrong English word, but your adamancy, that's not a word, but you're adamant about getting the thing done that you wanted to do so much that nothing was going to stand in your way to get it done, if that makes any sense at all. So strongholds are also storage places. Storage places, they hold food, they hold water, and they hold weapons. You and I sometimes think that we can go through life without a reserve, that we maybe can go through life without having some sort of a backup stuff. Maybe you think that you know you don't have to go to the store too often. Maybe once a year you can go to the grocery store. That's not going to feed you. That's not going to keep you going. You have to keep stuff in stock just in case. A lot of people in the military know that if they want to take down a stronghold, that they have to cut off the supply chain from the stronghold. I would suggest, this is just simply my idea, but don't you think that sometimes we cut off our own supply chain by the way we think, by the way we behave, by sometimes the way we treat people, maybe the way we think, maybe we only focus on this one avenue when there's all these other possibilities that we are not even looking at, and our answers are walking right behind us, and we're not keeping an eye on those things because we don't think that it can come from that angle. That makes any sense at all? And so there's other times in warfare that captors try to mess with the minds of the captives. In fact, in many situations, they give them a shovel and they point to a huge pile of dirt and tell them to move the dirt from this point to that point. And once that's done, they tell them to move it back again. And the idea is really do that for over days and days and weeks and months and months and months. And the whole goal is to remove their sense of purpose. They try to remove their sense of purpose. And I think that happens. In fact, your life should be purpose to the point that you have to protect that purpose, because that purpose is a stronghold. And stuff can get into your stronghold and dilute your stronghold and cause you to forget to maintain the supply chain that you need to maintain in your own life to get stuff done. In other words, it needs to be protected at all times. Greg Larson writes, recently National Geographic ran an article about the Alaskan bull moose. Now, I'm not from Alaska, but this guy supposedly is an expert. He said the males of the species battle for dominance during the fall breeding season, literally going head-to-head with antlers and crushing together as they collide. He says often the antlers, their only weapons, are broken. That ensures defeat. The heftiest moose with the largest and strongest antlers triumphs. Therefore, the battle fought in the fall is really won during the summer, listen, when the moose eat continually. The one that consumes the best diet for growing antlers and gaining weight will be the heavyweight in the fight. Those that eat inadequately and they sport weaker antlers and less bulk, there's a lesson for all of us. Will we be victorious or will we fall? Meaning that a lot of our success is and not success is by default. Meaning that if we want to build strongholds in our lives and have strongholds, good strongholds around us, then it has to be done intentionally. It can't be done accidentally, because if it's done accidentally, by default, it's weak or it's non-existent. And how many millions of people do you know go through life by default? They literally don't build the strongholds in their lives that create an attitude, that create a lifestyle that is less than what could be. Your attitude is, man, your attitude is the worst. In the worst situations can be so important. And you've seen me with my attitudes that have been very down during very difficult situations. And I may be there tomorrow. I have no idea. But maybe you're going to walk in that situation this week, right? The enemy is behind us. The enemy's in front of us many, many times. And the enemy many times is to the left of us and to the right of us. Sometimes you can't always see the enemy because sometimes they have a face that looks like your friend. Sometimes they even talk like your friend. But then when you do a little more diligence and a little more waiting sometimes, you really see what that person's all about, that they're not really your friend. Mm-hmm. The older I get, I've messed up in this situation so many times. I'm trusting less and verifying more.
All right.
You know, I mean, I'll definitely mess up in that situation again. But the older I get, I realize that I need to do a little more investigation before I lay out all my cards. Mm-hmm. Because the intention behind the people that I'm showing my cards to may not be so pure.
Right.
So I need to be really careful and not exposed too much. And I've made some mistakes in that arena on both sides of that coin in the past. Now, Wayne Field shared, General Peter Cosgrove is the recent retired chief of the Australian Defence Force. In his autobiography, he tells about his first tour of duty as a young lieutenant in Vietnam. He says his first posting was at a base near the village of Dat Do, D-A-T-D-O. The purpose of the base was to house Army engineers. These Australian soldiers would use giant bulldozers with a huge chain dragged between them, listen, to rip down vegetation. The purpose of this, listen, was to deny the enemy any possibility of concealment in the jungle. So huge tracts of jungle were best ripped down and burnt. That way no one could hide. The Australians were removing any camouflage that might be possible to be used for evil purposes. In dealing with your enemies, the author says, we have to pull down and lay flat the jungle in order to identify them. Once they have been identified, we can better deal with them. I know that that's very important with younger people, because this is strictly from my experience. Younger people think they know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, us older folk, yes, I can say older folk because half century is just a stone's throw away now, and I hate every second. We're not going to go there. It's driving me out of my mind. But us older folk look down, and it's so tempting to just tell them, you know, you're being an idiot. You're being a moron because, forgive my adjectives, but you have no clue what you're talking about. But oftentimes, you and I both know that when we want to express all those feelings of, you know, you're being stupid, it's not going to help anything. So some people are going to, I'm getting distracted. But sometimes we need to make sure that, you know, you and I have to surround ourselves with the people who have our best intentions.
Amen.
And if you're younger, maybe, you know, those of us less than 60 that are younger, you know, there are maybe some wisdom in some people that maybe we're not hanging around or maybe not reading their material enough that can save us stuff. Let me get back to the distractions. That you and I have to clear sometimes people in our lives that could be, let me just be as clear as I can, that are too close to us,
mm-hmm.
that they haven't been proven yet. Because those people that are maybe too close to you have maybe a knife in their back pocket, or maybe they have a javelin. So it sounds bizarre, maybe not too kind, maybe not too Christian, but you know, people have to prove themselves. People have to earn your trust. And even when they've earned the trust, it still takes a long time. And once young people, old people, in between people, once you violate that trust, it's going to take a really long time to earn that back. So I suggest to all of us that we value that trust very, very highly. There's times when exposing the enemy in our lives really makes zero sense. Over in 2 Chronicles chapter 20, let me just pause and talk about that. 2 Chronicles chapter 20, the Living Bible puts it this way. And sometimes, in fact, a lot of times, the stuff that I read in the Bible make zero sense to me. I mean, I'm not a military expert by any stretch, but some of the stuff in this book is just nonsensical. You're going to see what I mean in a minute. 2 Chronicles chapter 20, starting in about verse 20, the Living Bible puts it this way. It says, "Early the next morning, the army of Judah went out into the wilderness of Tekoa, and on the way, Jehoshaphat stopped and called them to attention. 'Listen to me, O people of Judah and Jerusalem,' he said. 'Believe in the Lord your God, and you will have success. Believe his prophets, and everything will be all right.'" Okay, that's general encouragement. I can handle that. But then it gets really weird. In verse 21, it says, "After consultation with the leaders of the people, he determined that there should be a choir leading the march." They're going into war. They're saying, "I want some singers in front of the guys holding the machine guns." Wasn't really machine guns, but, you know, bows and arrows and spears and all that stuff, right? I mean, again, verse 21. "After the consultations with the leaders of the people, he determined that there should be a choir leading the march." Just picture this in modern terms. "Clothed in the sanctified garments and singing the song," quote, "'His loving kindness is forever.' As they walked along praising and thanking God, and at the moment they began to sing and praise," listen, "'the Lord caused the armies of Ammon," the enemies of Ammon, Moab, and Mount Seir, listen, "'to begin fighting among themselves, and they destroyed each other.'" I'm now down in verse 23. "'For the Ammonites and Moabites turned against their allies from Mount Seir and killed every one of them. And when they had finished that job, they turned against each other.' So when the army of Judah arrived at the watchtower that looks out over into the wilderness as far as they could look, there were dead bodies lying on the ground. Not a single one of the enemy escaped," the story says. Verse 25. "King Jehoshaphat and his people went out to plunder the bodies and came away loaded with money and garments and jewels and stripped from the..." This is R-rated stuff in the Bible. It's all over the Bible, okay? "So much that it took them 3 days to cart it all away." This is totally illogical. Mm-hmm. Now, why would you send a choir? I mean, this is like stupid stuff. This is like nonsensical. Douglas MacArthur would not have done something like this, okay? So the point is, the stuff that God teaches in the Bible that work make no sense. Because, as I said, oftentimes, sometimes we look for the answer here, but the answer is somewhere back here that we're ignoring because it doesn't make sense. I think the older I get, most of life doesn't make sense. The answers that you seek sometimes The sources of the answers that you're seeking sometimes don't make sense. Sometimes, I found this to be true, sometimes the least educated people have answers that you may be looking for because they're going to come at you from a road that you're not expecting, that can give you an aha moment, if you will, because you don't think that wisdom can come from that source. That's Doesn't true. Make any sense. It could be somebody 90 years old. That's the example I have in my head. These older folk know a little something, okay? They've been around the tree that you've been walking around trying to figure out the tree. They mastered that tree 40 years ago, you know, and you think they're old and, you know, and decrepit and in the nursing home. Well, they got a boatload of wisdom if you just ask. If you just seek them out. Seniors are, generally speaking, not stupid. They've been around that tree a few dozen times longer than us. There's times that the weapons that you and I are asked to implement make no sense at all. Sometimes, the scriptures teach me, that sometimes singing like I said earlier, break down situations in your life that nothing else does. If we use Christian terms, worship oftentimes breaks down situations in your life that maybe your mental power doesn't do. Maybe your willpower doesn't cut it, but maybe worship does. The point being that sometimes the stuff that makes the least sense in the moment that you're involved in, that the struggle you're in the middle of, make no sense at all. So that means you got to keep your options open, where you're looking at every option that could potentially help you in life, right? There's an old quote that says, if you put soldiers in a barracks and leave them there long enough, they'll eventually start fighting among themselves. How many times haven't you decided, maybe, because of hurt, because of discouragement, because of fear, because of anxiety, that you're going to close yourself off? And then when that happens, within a very short period of time, it's happened to me, I know it's happened to you, that you start being picky. You start tearing down. You start saying, well, this and this about this. You start looking at other people's faults because you've closed yourself off. The older I get, I think that the more times I close myself off, I'm only hurting me. I'm only hurting because eventually it's really going to erode me from the inside out. I love watching these home improvement shows and these flipping shows where they buy clunkers and they fix them up and sell them for a profit. It's really cool because sometimes you can see what time does to these houses with termites and water damage, and how if it's left alone, it will erode something from a beautiful structure on the outside. When you get down to where the foundation is or where what's between the walls, you can see that stuff erodes stuff. So you and I have to be very proactive in not allowing certain things to erode us from the inside out. And believe you me, that is easier said than done. Again, some weapons of our warfare make no sense. Turn over to Joshua chapter 6. I'll just share a piece of the story. It's a long story, but I'll share just a piece of it. Joshua chapter 6, starting in verse number 1. Now Jericho, this was a walled city back, I didn't write down the notes about the time, let's say 3,500 years ago, okay? Joshua 6, starting in verse 1, says, now Jericho was tightly shut because of the sons of Israel. No one went out and no one came in. Verse 2. So God said to Joshua, see, I have given Jericho into your hand. Now again, this is an oxymoron to me. This is like a stupid sentence because the city is locked up. No one's coming in. Nobody's going out. God says to Joshua, see, man, I gave Jericho to you. You're going to take it out, right? Duh, that makes no sense. The story doesn't stop there. So it says again, see, I've given Jericho into your hand with its kings and the valiant warriors. Verse 3. And you shall march around the city, all the men of war circling the city once. You shall do it for 6 days. Verse 4. Also, seven priests shall carry seven trumpets of horns, of ram's horns before the Ark of the Covenant. Then, on the seventh day, you shall march around the city seven times, and the priests shall blow their trumpets, and it shall be that when they make a long blast with the ram's horns, again, this is very specific, isn't it? Right? I'll get to that in a minute. And when you hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city will come down flat. Again, oxymoron, I'm very sensible here. And the people will go up, every man straight ahead. Verse 6. So Joshua called to the priests and said to them, take up the Ark of the Covenant and let seven priests carry the trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of the Lord. Verse 7. Then he said to the people, go forward and march around the city and let the armed men go on before the Ark of the Lord. Again, the story goes on, and what happened, what God said was going to happen, happened. Now, what if you and I have a combination lock? I had a combination lock in high school. And there were so many times, because I'm slightly hyper. I was slightly hyper then. I'm more hyper now. And sometimes I skip past the correct combination. I'm sure it's happened to you, that you miss it by a number. Or maybe you forgot what it was and now you try to figure it out. The longer story short is, sometimes that when we leave out an ingredient, sometimes when we misapply certain things to be done in a certain way, then the results aren't going to be the way that we expected. And you could go through example after example after example. But there, at least in this story, just speaking from this story, what if they would have left out one of the details? Would the walls of Jericho come down? Or would they have said, well, you know, if we cut this out or we budget this out, we didn't buy enough ram's horns, or, you know, we forgot, you know, Joe was sick that day and this guy wasn't, you know. And what if the ingredients, what if the details were adjusted just slightly? And then they're not going to get the results they need. So again, the weapons of our warfare are determined many times by how exact we are when we implement certain things in our own lives. There's a story, kind of a silly comical story, but it says a number of years ago, a movie came out called The Bear. And when it went something like this: once upon a time, there was a mummy bear, the story says, and a baby bear. And they were so happy together. Then one day an accident happened, and the mummy bear died, leaving the little baby bear all alone in the world. One day, the poor, defenseless baby bear went out minding his own business when he was spotted by a mean, angry, hungry mountain lion. The baby bear started to run. He was trapped next to the river and jumped in. The mean and nasty mountain lion, he followed him downstream to where the baby bear came ashore at a crossing. The baby bear was trapped again and made a puny, squeaky sound as the mountain lion closed in for the kill. Then suddenly the baby bear stood to his feet, opened his mouth, and there was a massive, great roar. The mountain lion suddenly remembered that he had something else to do and ran for his life. He was terrified. How did the little baby bear do that? The cameras panned round, and there standing behind the baby bear was the hugest, their word, most ferocious daddy bear. Sometimes it's really important who you have behind you, who has your back. Because oftentimes the stuff that you go through, you know, at least through history, you think you did it, but you didn't see the big guy behind you, or the coworker that pulled some strings that you still don't know that they pulled those strings for you. So you think it was your talent and your experience and your good looks and your suave nature and how you carry yourself, when it really wasn't all that. It was that 32-year-old veteran at your employer that knew of you that you have integrity and you had a work ethic, and they were willing, listen, to invest in you in a way that they didn't want any credit at all. They just lifted you up. And I know there's people in this room who've done the same for other people. And that's a whole new sermon, what it's all about, called paying it forward, right? There have been so many times when few of us can see a way out of our situation. You've been there, I've been there, you'll be there, I'll be there. We just can't see it. The story says that Frank was 20 years old when he joined the Air Force to become an electronics technician. But the first thing he had to do was get through basic training. Failure to pass basic training meant being back-coursed and having to wait for the next intake. Part of basic was weapons training, and this involved firing accuracy and being able to label all the rifle parts, recite the series of events the rifle experienced, and firing and reloading and blah, 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 blah. All these details that my ADD-ness would just freak out over. Sometimes they had to do it blindfolded. One small mistake meant being back-coursed for 4 weeks. They had to start back all over again. Irrespective of their ultimate job in the Air Force, everyone had to gain 100% pass with their weapons training to avoid being back-coursed. Listen, every soldier has to learn to handle his weapons. And I think you and I have weapons. In fact, I know you and I have weapons that we haven't picked up in a long time, that we've had in the closet, in the safe, some of us, that we haven't handled in a long time. And then over time, what happens? You forget how to handle the weapon. Turn over to Ephesians chapter 6. The Phillips translation puts it in a pretty unique way. Ephesians 6, I know you don't have the Phillips translation. Just listen, follow along. Ephesians 6, starting in verse number 13, verse 10. In conclusion, he says, be strong, not in yourselves, but in God. Listen, in the power of his boundless resource. It says, again, the paraphrase of this text, put on God's complete armor so that you can successfully resist all the devil's methods of attack. For our fight is not against any physical enemy. It is against, listen, organizations and powers that are spiritual. We are up against the unseen powers that control this dark world. And he goes on to say that you put on the whole armor of God that you can resist evil in the day of power. Have you ever been able over time to resist evil because you had the right armor on, that you had the right mindset, that your spiritual life was intact? Whereas the other times when it wasn't so intact, and we'll get to that at the end, that stuff happens that shouldn't have happened because you didn't maintain. What happens when you don't change the oil in the car? Stuff happens. What happens when you don't put gas in the car? Stuff happens. I was across the street from Mondawmin Mall yesterday heading back from the hospital, and the temperature gauge goes through the literally almost to the red on the Jeep. So I was not near my mechanics. I was down near Mondawmin Mall. Excuse me a second. So we stopped on the side of the road on the corner of Pennsylvania Avenue, Reisterstown Road, or ish, right around that block or so. I'm thinking, what are my options? So I'll turn off the car, you know, say a little silent prayer, say a little few adjectives and, you know, a few things that, you know, kids didn't hear me. It was said in here, which is the same as saying I'm out your mouth. That's another sermon, isn't it? But anyway, I thought, what are my options? So I says, well, I'm not going to be able to get my stuff repaired here because I don't know any mechanics here. So I have to make it to the place where I can get repaired. The point of the example is we have to go to our place. When you get overheated, which is going to happen in your life, it's really important that you and I get to our place, because if we don't get to our place, then guess what's going to happen? You're going to stay stuck in a situation that you don't need to be stuck in because you refuse to, let me use these terms, you refuse to take the chance to go where you need to go to get filled up, to get fixed in situations in your life because you're afraid of what may happen. The point being that I drove where I needed to be, and the car was acting fine. It didn't act up at all. Now, I still had some stuff replaced because I'm not taking a chance. But the point being that I could have stayed. I could have complained. I could have crybabied. I could have had all these feelings instead of what? Keep moving forward, even though sometimes stuff happens and you get a little overheated here and there. Life, listen, life is supposed to be proactive and intentional. Again, life is supposed to be proactive and intentional, not reactive. So many of us tend to be reactive instead of proactive. When we're reactive, we're like a ship, as somebody said. We're like a boat, a rowboat, a sailboat on the ocean when your sail's down or without turning on the motor or without using the oars. That happens to us all the time. When you and I and those we love don't heed some of the words, all the words in the scriptures about the warfare of life, then what's going to happen? That we're not going to climb to the strongholds that we need in our lives. There's a song that Harvest had out. You know the song years ago. It says, are you walking into the enemy's camp, laying your weapons down? Are you shedding your armor as you go, leaving it on the ground? You and I have done that. You and I have been in relationships in our lives, workplace, neighbors, where we came to them with no armor on at all. And guess what happened? You got stabbed in the heart because you took your armor off. Because you thought that you could trust when you didn't verify. You thought that you could believe everything that came out of their mouth was the truth. And you didn't verify what they were saying. These days, I'll say it for the fourth or fifth time, when you tell me something, unless I know you that I know you that I know you, I'm going to check you out. I mean, there's people in my life right now that I'm online checking out their criminal history about every week to know what's happening in their lives, because if they come anywhere close to where double armor's going up. Y'all been there, right? Amen. And there's a great example of how arrogance can get in our way, because arrogance can literally enable you to lose the armor that you've acquired over the years. There's a great story that Frank Koch tells. He says, two battleships, you've heard the story, two battleships were assigned to this training squadron, had been at SEAL maneuvers in heavy weather for several days, right? And so he says, I was serving on the lead battleship and was on watch on the bridge as night fell. The visibility was poor with patchy fog, so the captain remained on the bridge, keeping an eye on all the activities. So shortly after dark, this person on the bridge, he reported light bearing on the starboard bow. "It is steady or moving astern?" they asked. The captain called out. The lookout replied, "Steady, captain," which meant we were on a dangerous collision course with that ship. The captain then called to the signalman, "Signal that ship, we are on a collision course. Advise, change your course 20 degrees. Back came the signal, "Advisable for you to change course 20 degrees. The captain said, "Send this message. Send, I am the captain. Change course 20 degrees. Well, the response came back, "I'm a petty officer, second class," came the reply. "You had better change course 20 degrees. You've had those arrogant people in your life, right? But there was a little caveat. By that time, the captain was furious. He spat out, "Send, I'm a battleship. Change course 20 degrees. Back came back the flashing light. I'm a lighthouse. We changed course," the battleship said. They moved. Because there are some people, there's some titles, there's some situations in your life that you need to yield. You need to back up. You need to adjust course because there's some people, there's some situations that, forgive my poor English, ain't going to change.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So you're going to need to change in your life. The Old Testament talks about it all the time. It says, everyone who's arrogant, listen, Proverbs says this. Everyone who is arrogant in heart, I'll say it again. Everyone who is arrogant in heart is an abomination to God. It says, be assured, he will not go unpunished. Proverbs 16 says, of the seven things the Bible tells us that God hates are haughty eyes, a proud look, and that's first on the list. Haughty eyes, arrogant, an arrogant look, an arrogant view, looking down upon people. Earlier this morning, I sent a text out of a video clip of Russian jets flying past a cruiser in the Baltic Sea. You didn't get the text. It's okay. I'll explain it to you later. But the arrogance of the example is the arrogance of these planes, these jets, flying so low past this battleship that maybe they didn't realize that they could have been blown out of the sky. And if you listen to the audio of the people on the bridge, I don't know if it was a captain or some officer, but he was so cool and calm about it. Here's what I took away from it. He knew what he had at his disposal. He knew that he had all the weapons he needed they didn't need to cremate these pilots and the jets. They would have been cremated, you know, by the armaments and the power behind these ships. So oftentimes, let me extend the point, that you and I are sometimes intimidated by the low flybys of stuff that happens across your bow. You know, stuff happens quickly and maybe in a very threatening manner. That sometimes when you know what you have, these little things aren't very threatening. I can remember a certain young man that I won't mention his name, but he thought that he was all that, and he would get in my face, but he didn't realize that I could snap him in half. And it was so hard for me to walk away, probably, I don't know, 8-10 times over the year or two, because I knew that it wouldn't take much for me just to snap, maybe readjust his spine a little bit, you know what I'm saying? That maybe put him in a situation where he wouldn't do that ever again. There's times when you and I have to understand what's in us. The point is, the extended point, is greater than all the stuff that's going on around you. Because you know what weapons you have at your disposal. If you go over to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, it gives you the exact opposite of what I just shared. 1 Corinthians says, love is patient and kind. Whew, some days I don't feel like being patient and kind. 1 Corinthians 13:4, it says, love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant. So forgive my simplicity here. But if Proverbs says that God doesn't like arrogant people, and he views it as an abomination to God, And here in 1 Corinthians, it says that love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant. Then what does that tell me what God would rather have in all of us? A loving heart, right? That God, that's what attracts God to us in our own lives. Over in Philippians 2, it says, do nothing from rivalry or conceit. But listen, this is the part I like. But in humility, count others more significant than yourselves. Philippians 2:3. Again, in humility, count others more significant than yourselves. That is always having a servant mindset, always having a servant posture. Because when you and I, listen, when you and I have a servant posture, there's no room for arrogance. There's no room for pride because you look at everybody around you that's better than you or above you. So you serve, if you serve all, this is what I read in the Bible all the time. When you and I serve other people, that's the attitude that God loves in all of us. Am I making any sense to you here today? William Ward writes, discouragement is, and then let me back up a minute. There's other times when pride sometimes gets in the way, but there's also times, I'm really hurrying to wrap it up. There's times in life when discouragement crawls into bed with you every night and then stares back at you in the morning when you look in the mirror to brush your teeth. Discouragement. Sometimes, so there's William Ward writes, discouragement, listen, is dissatisfaction with the past. Think about this a minute. Let me slow it down to half speed. Discouragement is dissatisfaction with the past, distaste for the present, and distrust of the future. This is William Ward's words. He says, it is ingratitude for the blessings of yesterday, indifference to the opportunities of today, and insecurity regarding strength for tomorrow. Again, William Ward. I think William Ward lived about 100 plus years ago. It is unawareness, he says, of the presence of beauty, unconcern for the needs of our fellow men, and unbelief in the promises of old. He ends with, it is impatience with time, immaturity of thought, and impoliteness to God. That's a big definition of what discouragement can be in our lives. So I'll almost end with what causes discouragement. Rick Warren has some great ideas of what causes, let me just run through them quickly. Fatigue is the big one. When you get tired, discouragement sets in. Frustration invites discouragement. So if you want to avoid the discouragement, you deal with fatigue, you deal with frustration, you deal with the failure in your life, because that brings on discouragement. Fear brings on discouragement. What if, you know, what if I mess up? What if I, you know, drop the ball? What if I say the wrong thing? Now, some cures for discouragement is the opposite of what I just shared. Resting your body enough, but not too much. You know, young people, teenagers, especially mid-teens, they could sleep 14 hours a day and not blink an eye about it. I mean, that's like more than two-thirds of my day is done, and you're still in bed at X time. I'm not going to name names. When you reorganize your life in a way, that's more appropriate, then guess what happens? Let me say it a different way. When you declutter your life, then discouragement kind of takes a back seat. Because clutter, and I can be clutterful. That's not a word, is it? I can live in clutter if I'm not careful. So while Tammy's in the hospital for a month, I'm reminding myself, is what would Tammy do? Not what would Jesus do, what would Tammy do? Because the last thing I want to do is Tammy to surprise me and walk home and, oh my God, the house is a wreck. And then she goes bananas because she's very organized. The point is that clutter can cause stress. Clutter can cause anxiety. So you and I have to maybe reorganize our lives in a way that there's less clutter, so that there's less stress, which will then be less fatigue, less anxiety, then discouragement may not take over. Napoleon Bonaparte said one time, in war, the morale is to the physical as 10 to 1. Now, let me slow that down to 1/10 speed. In war, the morale is to the physical as 10 to 1. What that says is that if your morale is down, then you don't have the willpower to fight. when the morale is up, then you may not have all the weapons you need, but you think you do, so you can take on any enemy if your morale is up. So isn't it important, this, I'm not only speaking to me, isn't it important for you and I to keep the people in our lives and stuff in our lives in a way that help us maintain the morale that we need? So if that's not intentional, then what happens by default? What happens by default is discouragement. When you know you don't think that you can take another step ahead because you haven't created an environment in your own life and organized your life in a way that will help you take steps up to the strongholds that I told you about that you need to maintain in your life in order for good things to happen in your life. So I end with in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, we're human, but we don't wage war as humans do. We use God's mighty weapons, not worldly weapons, to knock down the strongholds, the destruction of strongholds. Verse 5, we destroy every proud obstacle that keeps people from knowing God. We capture their rebellious thoughts and teach them to obey Christ. You and I have to be proactive, is the point I'm trying to make here today. Because our weapons are not like the weapons that you and I would expect. So end with one story. Parable told by, I always say his name wrong, Reinhard Bonnke. He was an evangelist, or is an evangelist that was around for a long time. He said a man had a two-story house. He heard a knocking and opened the door and found Jesus there. So he invited him to live in the house, and he gave him a room on the top floor. Jesus will only take what you give him, the story says. So the man was sleeping and heard a pounding on the door again. So he opened the door a crack, and the devil barged in. He had a terrible fight. Fighting to resist the devil and his temptations, he was yelling out for help all the time. Eventually, he managed to throw the devil out. In the morning, he said, "Why didn't you help me last night, Jesus? Why didn't you help? Couldn't you hear me calling out for help?" So Jesus said, "The problem is you've got this big house to yourself, and I've only got this one room." "Man, I see your point. You can have the whole top floor, so I'll just keep the bottom floor." Okay. So the man was sleeping and heard a pounding on the door and opened the door a crack, and the devil barged in again. He had a terrible fight, trying to resist the devil and his temptations and yelling out for help all the time. Eventually, he managed to throw the devil out again. In the morning, he said, "Why didn't you help me, Jesus? Couldn't you hear me calling out for help?" So Jesus, you know, he certainly responded calmly and meekly. He says, "The bottom floor, you know, to yourself. Man, I see what you mean. From now on, the whole house is yours." So that night, the man went to sleep, and this time Jesus went to the door after he heard a pounding at the door and opened it wide and stood in the doorway. The devil looked at him and bowed very low and said, "I'm sorry, but I think I knocked on the wrong door." I think you and I have to master the weapons that we have in our own lives. So when we master the weapons that we have in our own lives, then the results are going to be in a manner that we haven't experienced heretofore. Because when we master the weapons, then we can really overcome and take on more than we think that we can take on when we master the weapons that are available to us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I'm so fired up about my fourth book that came out. It's called Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks for a Successful and Rewarding Life. I've compressed about 25 years of knowledge, experience, and learning from a lot of people to help you in your life. You can get a copy of it over at TremendousLifeBooks.com. Again, TremendousLifeBooks.com. Here's some more information about it. For the last 25 years, I've visited with thousands of people in their homes. Many of these people I've met with have no goals, no dreams, no ambitions, and no roadmap for their life. I've seen so many people sitting on their front porches watching life go by. In 2006, my wife and I started building our home with bedrooms for each of our six kids. I always made sure that the foundation of our home was solid. I didn't want to take any chances with the lives of my family. So it is with life. My book, Build Your Foundation,
68 building blocks of a successful, rewarding life is jammed full of ideas that can help you today. My book is a collection of ideas and short stories really designed to help you turn your life around and to help impact the people that you care about and that you love so much. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, Build Your Foundation will help you fortify yourself for a lifetime of success and to give you the courage to go for your dreams in life. Don't miss out on what you can accomplish. You can scale any height and achieve any goal. This book will help you get there. I have a passion to help millions of people change their lives. This book is easy to read, has short chapters, and can help you right now and change your life today. I believe in you. Thank you so much for listening to the John Carver Show. If you want more information about me, just simply go to my website, www.johnwcarver.com. Again, thanks so much for listening to the show today, and remember, I believe in you.
Thank you for listening to the John Carver Show. Please tune in again right here Monday through Friday for more insights and opinions on how you can reach your goals and dreams in life.